Okay, good evening. So what I'd like to discuss with you tonight, and to begin with, is going to be our summer series, is Minhagim. Now, thank you. Minhagim are interesting in that there's so much of what we do which is not found in traditional halachic sources. And people ask, like, why do we do this? Answer, it's a minhag. Okay, well, that sort of begs the question, why on earth do we have to keep minhagim? Are minhagim obligatory? Can I just opt in and opt out? Right? And if not, why not? That's really the question that I want to talk to you about tonight. I want to discuss with you the source of minhagim. Next introduction. Minhag is a very broad term that means lots of different things in lots of different places. No? For example, there are minhagim that come up in Shulchan Aruch and Mishpat in terms of if I hire a worker, so the worker is supposed to work from sunrise until sunset, but if the minhag in your country, let's say, is that you work 9 to 5, so hakol kim minhag hamedina. Right? So that's one type of minhag. Then there are other types of minhagim that involve certain things which are really halachically permitted, but we just don't do. Right? For example, everybody knows that gebrux is really permitted, but like, come on, no self-respecting chassidish yid would eat gebrux.
Chassidish?
Yeah! Oh, you're saying that, like, I should take the word chassidish out of sense. No self-respecting Jew. That was your argument, not mine.
No, that's not my argument at all.
German Jews are proud to eat gebrux.
What?
German Jews are proud to eat gebrux. It's one of our identifying characteristics.
Right, of course, 100%. Now, for certain people, minhagim are like identifying characteristics. That's also an important thing. And one of the things that we're going to have to try to flesh out over the next couple weeks is what exactly is minhag? In other words, there can be a minhag, like we said in Choshen Mishpat. There could be minhagim in Isser v'Heter, right? What's kosher, what's non-kosher. Is a minhag based on where I live? Is a minhag based on where I come from? Is a minhag based on something that my family does? Right? That's another question that we'll have to focus on in terms of minhagim. So far, so good? So what on earth does minhag mean? That's the next question. Now, by the way, we're not going to answer all these questions tonight. We're just kind of trying to pique your curiosity.
Minhag spelled backwards is Gehenna.
So minhag spelled backwards is Gehenna. Rabbi Nutan writes that.
Really?
Rabbi Nutan writes that in the Sefer HaYashar. Okay. And the Rishonim use this all the time. Minhag spelled backwards is Gehenna. Yet, we also have a Yerushalmi that says that minhag is Okir Halacha. Right? Isn't this like the most famous Yerushalmi that like everyone always talks about? Yeah, the Halachas, I can't do that. Yeah, but minhag. Right? My minhag is I eat pork. Right? So, like, obviously that's not going to work, but what we have to figure out are what are the parameters of this. Now, there's also minhagim of an individual, and there's minhagim of a community. No?
Yes.
So, as an individual, I can have a minhag that I fast bahab. A community could have minhagim, like gebrux, like kitnios, etc. No? So, what we will talk about is all of this eventually, but before we really have the conversation, we have to talk about why it is that we keep minhagim bigadol, and then hopefully we'll be able to plug some of this in. Hi, Gila.
Hi. Just another question about minhag. Isn't one of the minhagim about like community and non-communities, like if there's like one shul that doesn't bring Shabbos early, you don't have to bring Shabbos early.
Right, so the hard thing over here is like, what's considered minhag, what's considered halacha? There is a din in Hilchos Shabbos, if you have an entire town where everybody makes early Shabbos, so then you're bound by that, effectively, right? because the entire town did it. Now, Moshe Feinstein has a kula. He says if the entire community only makes early Shabbos, let's say, in the summer, not in the winter. I don't know. Do you know anyone who makes early Shabbos in the winter? Making early Shabbos in the winter, you have to be a lunatic.
Now,
Shabbos this week is going to be at 2:40. For those of you,
In Millionaire Sharm, 2:45, closing the stores in the summer.
I don't know, but what exactly the parameters of these issues are and what's considered a minhag, what's considered a halacha, we will try to discuss to the best of our ability. Okay, now for me, I have to admit also that this is a learning project. So I don't really have complete conclusions, but we'll try to work it through together. Just a few of the svarim that we're using to try to flesh out minhagim. So Rabbi Simon wrote a volume on minhag around 2-3 years ago or something. Rabbi Simon wrote a volume, Tavshin Ayin Hei, so that was 3 years ago. So that's one source that I'm using to just get sources from. Menachem Elon, Shofet Menachem Elon, wrote Mishpat Ivri, which is, he tried to argue, he was a Supreme Court justice in Israel, he tried to argue that Israel doesn't have a constitution because it doesn't need a constitution because we have something called Torah, and Torah should be the constitution, but we have to look to see what the halacha says about every issue and how halacha works. So he wrote Mishpat Ivri in there from page 714 until 800 something. It's a massive book. It was actually translated into English by Melvin Sykes, who was a lawyer in Baltimore. So in the Mishpat Ivri, he has around 100 pages fleshing out Minhagim. There's also 8 volumes of Professor Daniel Sperber's stuff on Minhagim. That's not really germane to what we're doing in particular, because he focuses on pinpoint conversations. But what's the source of this Minhag? What's the source of that Minhag? That's not what I want to do. I want to talk Bigadol. So his stuff is not really going to be part of our conversation, but we'll bring certain things up. Okay, so let's go relatively simply. The source of Minhag, according to the Torah Tamima, quoting from a tshuva of Reb Shirigon, is a pasuk in Parashas Shoftim. The Torah says, "Lo sasig vore acha shegavlu rishonim benachloscha asher tincha ba'aretz asher Hashem lokecha dosim lechol rishta." Now, what does that pasuk mean? I just said it in Hebrew. What does it mean in English? Lo sasig vore acha.
Don't expand borders.
Don't encroach on someone else's boundary. Okay, so if I have a neighbor and we share a backyard and my fence falls down, I'm not allowed to move my fence to take a couple of more feet from my neighbor's yard. That's a special isser in Eretz Yisrael of Lo Sasig Vorei Acha. Right? That's isser is only B'nachlos Asher Tincha, only in Eretz Yisrael. It would be an isser of Geneva anywhere, no? You're not allowed to steal. Now don't give me lumdus, but there's no Geneva in Karka. No Geneva in Karka just means that you don't pay kefel, etc., right? No, right? That's what it means. Obviously, you violate an Issur D'oraisa if you steal someone's land. Fine. So, that's what the Pasuk says. Chazal have a number of drushes from this Pasuk, but the Torah Tumim over here quotes that, based on this Pasuk, Sasig Vorecha, Gvorecha is Mikan de Minhaga Milsehi. It's a truth of Reb Shirigon. Reb Shirigon says that from here you see that minhag is significant. Now, how on earth you get that one? Right, from encroaching on territory, how do you get that minhag is significant? So the source of the Reb Shirigon is the Tshuvas HaGaonim. The next source, the Tshuvas HaGaonim Shari Tzedek Simen Daled, Os Aleph, the end of Os Chaf. Okay? And the case over here is as follows. If I buy stolen goods, now, don't tell me this never happens, because let me tell you a story. When we first moved into the Heights, so one morning I get up, and actually it was during the summer. I was running a kollel that summer in Romer Synagogue in Teaneck. So I go to get my car to move it, and I notice miraculously that my headlights are missing. Yeah. How did this happen? So I like call somebody over. He's like, oh, no, Jerome. I have no idea what the guy's talking about. So apparently there's a place that you could go to called Jerome Avenue in the Bronx, and you could buy headlights for your car. You could buy mirrors, headlights. I used to park sometimes before I got a parking spot. I would park down in YU on the angle in by like 193rd. We used to call it parking in Yenom Veldt. You know what I'm talking about? Parking all the way down there. And I have had my headlights and my mirrors stolen from my car. And the thing about when your headlights and mirrors are stolen is they also, in Jerome Avenue, they sell special guards so that your headlights and mirrors can't get stolen. This is godless. Now, you get an impression that what goes on over there is called hacking. Not in the yeshivish sense, but hacking in the sense of that they take stuff and they sell it back.
Kidnapping.
What?
Almost like kidnapping.
Like kidnapping on some level, that you kidnap a headlight.
You ransom
what? Huh?
You ransom your headlight.
So, the case is, let's say I buy goods that are stolen, and I know who it's stolen from. Right? I take the headlights and it says Schwartz. I know who it's stolen from. Am I supposed to return it to Schwartz? I bought it. So I paid money. So my Iker HaDin, I don't have to pay. I don't have to give it back to the original owner. Nonetheless, the Shuvas HaGaonim says, in Balas Yisidei Shemayim, you return it to the original owners, but in this Kavin Liktom Asabayim Lokeach Bezo, HaReyadover Masal Leiv, Amin HaShemayim Nefram Yimenu. If your intention is that you want to buy it cheap, so then God will get you. Okay. So there was somebody who wrote to Reb Shri Rigon. He says, in our community, the minhag is that we return the headlights to the original owner, and the original owner pays me the amount that I spent on the headlights. So, in bevadai kacha yahadavar, chayav kol adam levilti shnos minhigosehem, da amina menola de minhag milsa, de chsivro tasig vorecha ashagavro rishonem. Says Rav Shira Gaon, if you really have such a minhag, you gotta keep it, because, this is the source, there's a pasuk of lo tasig vorecha. Now, just to analyze, what is this source of minhag about? What's he talking about? What type of minhag? So he is talking about a minhag of Dine Mamanes, no? And he's talking about a community minhag, not an individual minhag, correct?
Yeah.
If there's a minhag in your community that everyone returns the stolen headlights to the owner, so that's the only source that I have for Reb Shri Rigon, and that somehow is included of Lo Tasig Vore'acha, which, again, probably means don't encroach on someone's territory. If your community has a practice, it's not exactly clear how this is the source, but that's the source. And the Torah Tamima.
Sorry, but aren't all minhagim originally communal? And the only
okay. So this is a point that I plan on getting to in a few minutes. The answer is maybe, kind of, sort of, but not.
I totally get that.
Right? Let me explain. Right? For those who are not as quick as Gila, so let me explain. Maybe, kind of, sort of, but not means that minhag can come in different ways. There can be certain things called minhag, which is something that is way-driven, but there's also certain things which are top-down but are still called minhagim. The Rambam tells me, for example, that there is an Isser D'Oraisa of Lotasur, right? Lotasur means that you have to listen to the Torah, you have to listen to the rabbis who interpret the Torah, and Zok the Rambam, there's Lotasur on Takanos, which are mitzvahs as say midrabanan, and Gezeros, which are mitzvahs los as say midrabanan, and Minhagim. Whoa, Minhagim? Like, what the heck? How's there Lotasur and Minhagim? What do the rabbis have to do with the Minhag? I'll tell you what the answer is. Sometimes, and Rav Salvation used to say this, and this will answer a number of questions as we go on, but sometimes rabbis decide to institute a practice not by saying, do this or don't do this, but instead rabbis institute a practice by saying, you know what, I'm going to do something, And like, you know, like the Brisker story about how Reb Volvo one time moved a broom before he lit the Chanukah menorah, and like all the Briskers then moved the broom before they light the Chanukah menorah? Like, it's make-believe, it didn't happen. But the point is, sometimes if you're a great rabbi and you do something, everyone imitates you. And there are certain minhagim that are instituted, when the rabbi says it was a sussur on the minhag, the rabbi can't mean, it's inconceivable that a minhag that's way-driven would have lo sussur. Lo sussur means, listen to the rabbis. What the heck do the rabbis have to do with it? The answer might be that sometimes we assume that if everybody is doing something, it was instituted by some rabbi, but not by saying, do this, but by doing it. And that's a different type of minhag.
It sounds like it wants to get people, like, I want to say, like, get, it just, there's something there that sounds like they're trying to find a way to make something. It's like, no Jew would ever purposely do that, therefore we know that there was, like, when you talk about, like, Koko Shabbos, or whatever, like, nobody would do that, so therefore it's fine. Which is kind of what this sounds like, a little bit, as opposed to being, like,
it's a little bit of backwards reasoning in the sense of, I don't know that it actually happened, but, I mean, I'll say it like this, okay? We're going to discuss making brachos on minhagim. Now, in some ways, making a bracha on a minhag makes no sense, right? Because a bracha is Hashem kicham and so sabbatibanam, God commanded us. So maybe if something's a mitzvah d'rabbanan, the Gemara in Shabbos asks, why did I make a bracha when I do a mitzvah d'rabbanan? But something's a minhag, how can you make a bracha on a minhag? It doesn't make sense. Yet we Ashkenazi Jews do this all the time. We make brachos on things which are minhagim. Absolutely. Hallel on Rosh Chodesh is a minhag. We Ashkenazim make a bracha on it. What the heck? Answer is that the word minhag means different things in different places. And what I'm going to try to get at, although I don't have the full answer as to how the chessboard works out, is that the different sources for minhag are probably referring to different types of minhag. That's my bait. This is the way it works in my mind, but again, I haven't fully developed this, so I'm working with you. Hello.
Hi. I belong to a shul. Got an email. I'm a different shul besides this. Got an email before Tisha B'Av from the rabbi. He said, we're beginning a new minhag. This Tisha B'Av, the whole shul will say Eicha together. Correct.
Interesting.
So then, is it we're beginning a new minhag? Does that make sense? Or
so, yeah, that could make sense.
Depends on you.
But again, you see, what's interesting is that comes from the rabbi. And the rabbi is saying, I want the congregation to all do this. Yes. So that is minhag in the sense of, it's not strict halacha, but it's going to be our private practice. Sometimes minhag means what we do, or what might be a halacha in this shul, but not a halacha elsewhere. Right? Assuming that you're supposed to listen to the rabbis, and you're not going to get me to disagree with this one. Right? Yes. Hi, Frida.
Does a thing like that have to be called a minhag? I mean, if the rabbi says, this time we are going to try something new, or we are going
so
to...
So what I'll say is like this. The word... There are lots of words. There's some term for this in English. Homonyms, like that you have the same word that means different things. Is that what they're called?
No.
Homophones?
Homonym is two and two.
Okay. C-O-O. There's some term for some, like the word glasses, okay? When I say glasses, what do I mean? Do I mean uchkis, or do I mean like kosochtia? Right? Uchkis, by the way, is the Russian term for a glass.
Okay.
But there's no one here speaks Russian. I'm a ratsis. What's going on? Your great-grandparents probably spoke Russian. What happened? How come we don't keep them in Hagen?
Listen, my grandparents dumped Russian the minute they got here.
So, what I would argue is that sometimes in halacha, we have the same word that means different things in different places. Okay? Chazaka is a good example. Chazaka means a ton of different things. There's a chazaka that if I have squatter's rights on the field for 3 years, it's mine. That's called cheskes habatim. There's chazaka that whatever I'm holding is presumably mine. So if I have a yarmulke on my head, it's probably my yarmulke. I probably didn't steal the yarmulke. That's a different type of chazakah. There's a chazakah that if I did something three times, I'll continue to do it. That's a different type of chazakah. The word chazakah has lots of different meanings, no? And minhag has lots of different meanings also. And what we're going to have to do when we get into the specifics is try to flesh it out. So now, Rav Shvi Regon says that the source of minhag comes from this pasuk of Los Hasig Vore'acha. Some of the later Sfarim point out that maybe he's making a mistake. Maybe he's quoting the wrong pasuk. You see, if minhag comes from Los Hasig Vore'acha, that would mean that minhag presumably is a din d'oraisa. And that would be like very hard to swallow. So, some suggest that maybe the source of minhag is a different pasuk. That sounds very much the same. There's a verse in Mishlei, Al Taseg Gvo Olam Asher Asu Avosecha. Al Taseg Gvo Olam Asher Asu Avosecha means don't encroach on the boundaries for the world. Your parents established a boundary, don't encroach on that. Keep what they did. Al Taseg Gvo Olam Asher Asu Avosecha. And the Medrash in Mishlei, this is the Buber edition of the Medrash, says, Amreb Shem Ben Yochai, Minhag She Asu Avosecha Al Tashane Oto. A minhag that your parents made, don't change. For example, the example given is Avram says you should daven shachris, right? And Yitzchak says you should daven mincha, and Yaakov says you should daven ma'ariv. Whoa! That's a minhag? Hey, does that sound like a minhag to you? Oh, I'm sorry, it's not my minhag to daven, Rabbi. Right? What do you mean? Right? Avram Avinu says you should daven shachris, Rabbi. It's not my minhag. Right? It's a medrash in Mishlei. The answer is that the Medrash is using this word minhag to mean din derabbanan of sorts. And it's a din derabbanan that we have in tradition, al taseg vol olam asher asu avosecha, meaning it comes from your forefathers, etc. That's a type of minhag. Another possible source for minhag, the she'otos in Parshas Vayakhel, in the context of Purim, the she'otos writes that we should keep minhagim. For example, in communities where there's a minhag not to do work on Purim, so don't do work on Purim. That's what the She'otos says. And what's the source of keeping minhagim? Says the She'otos, it comes from Al Titosh Toras Imecha. Right? That's like the first pasuk in Mishlei or something. Right? Right? Well, right. Third pasuk something. Right? That Al Titosh Toras Imecha. That's the source of minhagim. Now, I don't know why I need so many sources of minhagim, and I would argue that these are different types of minhagim that we're talking about. A minhag of not doing work on Purim was something that was locally instituted. This community does work, this community doesn't do work. However, a minhag of davening shachris mincha ma'ariv probably is for all of Klal Yisrael, but it's not as strong as other things. Now, here's the kicker. Gemara Nedarim Das Tesvav. Gemara Nedarim says that if you violate a minhag, you violate Baal Yachel Midrabanan. Meaning, there's a din d'oraisa that if I take a vow, I say a vow is a neder in Hebrew, which is saying that it's object-oriented. There was no good term for the difference between nedarim and shavuos until computer language came. Because shavua is an iser gavra, and neder is an iser chefza. Object-oriented is a nice way of saying iser chefza. No? Okay, whatever. The point is that nedarim is that the object is forbidden on me. Right? So these potato chips, they are forbidden. That's a neder. Now, if I violate a neder, I am a really, really bad Jew, and there's an Isser Bal Yachel, an Isser Deiraisa of Lo Yachel Dvarel. Zok the Gemara, there's also Bal Yachel Midrabanon if I don't keep a minhag. That's Nedarim Dap Tesvav. There's Bal Yachel Midrabanon if I don't keep a minhag. Now, the funny thing is, the Chassam Sofer writes in the Tshuva, something that seems to go against this Gemara, unless we somehow doctor it up. Let me explain. There is a prohibition in the Gemara, in Avodah Zarah Daf Lamed Hei, called Cholav Akum. What's Cholav Akum? Right? Most of us in America don't know that such an issue exists because Moshe Feinstein said we could drink all the milk in the States. But often, I get these shilas like all the time. And the shilas are something to the effect of, I'm traveling to this and this country, can I drink the milk? So one time I get a shayla, I'll tell you the shayla, someone from the shul, I remember who it was, and maybe if I'm in a good mood I'll tell you, but she's traveling to Peru. Is she allowed to drink the milk in Peru? So I contact the OU to find out, what do you know about the milk in Peru? And no one knows anything about the milk in Peru. Finally, one of the rabbis in the OU puts me in touch with somebody else, and he's in touch, and there is an institution called Kosher Peru. It's a kashrus agency. And Kosher Peru says that all the milk in Peru is fine because the minhag in Peru is we follow the Pri Chadash. Let me explain what this means. There is a prohibition that you can't drink non-Jewish milk, Cholav Akum. The reason is because we're worried that maybe instead of cow milk, you have sow milk. Right? That's what the Gemara says. That's the Isser. Even though, technically speaking, Cholav Behema Tameya looks a little different than Cholav Behema Tahora, it's a little greener, it's not as white, nonetheless, the Gemara says it's an Isser, worried some of it gets mixed in, etc. That's what the Gemara says, it's an Isser. Comes on the Pri Chadash and the Radvaz, and they have the idea that if there are no non-kosher animals in your region that get milked, so then all the milk is fine. If the only, that doesn't mean that there are no non-kosher animals in your region, but probably no one milks a horse. Just guessing. Even though they have all these stories, like there's some Marcus Lehman story about some guy who needed horse milk because he was going to die or something. No?
Okay. Mortimer found a farm that was manufacturing camel milk last year.
So Gordimer wrote some articles, Rabbi Gordimer wrote some articles about this. That created a big issue, although it's very expensive to manufacture camel milk, and you probably don't have to worry about it. But the Pri Chadash says, if there's no non-kosher animal in your area that is being milked, all the milk is fine. And he says that this was the practice in Amsterdam. Okay.
But in Amsterdam or Peru?
The Pri Chadash says this is the practice in Amsterdam. Now, the Peru, the rabbi in Peru says that the minhag in Peru is that they follow that Pri Chadash. Even though the Chassam Sofer in the Tshuva basically jumps up and down and spits wood and nickels and says, like, dear Pri Chadash, what the heck are you talking about? You're against the Gemara, you're against Judaism, etc. But this guy says that the minhag in Peru is that we drink milk relying on this Pri Chadash. Now, a few things. Minhag in Peru. Now, was there an established Jewish community in Peru all these years? Like, to say there's a minhag, right? Anyone here from Peru? Okay, this is a scientific survey. Anyone?
Very small sample.
Very small sample size. But there is zero incidence of the people from Peru here in this year. That means that there's no minhag in Peru. Right? That's proof positive.
Now, to take it, if they're coming, let's say, pretend that they're coming over from Spain, the Inquisition or whatever, and then they go to Amsterdam first, blah, 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 but all Minhagen, so I'm guessing that they're coming from Amsterdam.
Right, so if it would be that there was a Jewish community that came from Amsterdam and moved to Peru, that would be one thing. Because Amsterdam is a very old community, they have Minhagen. The Jewish community in Peru ain't much of a community. Never was. Right? Moreover, there is no real documentation of like a history of rabbis in Peru. So to say that there's a minhag in Peru that we follow the Pri Chadash, yeah, it's skeptical. And the Pri Chadash is against the accepted halacha. Comes along the Chassam Sofer in a tshuva, and he writes like this. Everybody knows that Orthodox Jews don't drink milk, even in communities where there is no treif animal that is being milked. Everybody knows that. And that means one of two things. Either the Pri Chadash is wrong lahalacha, or the Pri Chadash is right, but there's a minhag not to follow the Pri Chadash. Right? Okay. So far, so good?
Yeah.
That's what the Chassam Sofer writes. Yeah. When we can read it inside. Right here, the Pischei Tshuva quotes, Ayin Chassam Sofer, Sherech Lohavi Rayas to Cholof Neser B'minyin K'yayin Nesech, where the Chov is a Dover Sheb B'minyin, which means that the Isser applies all the time. against the Radvaz and the Pri Chadash. And even if the halach would be like the Radvaz, kvar kiblu avoseinu alayhem ka'osa deya demachmir va'asar b'nei Ashkenaz midina ve'ein lo hatara v'karov b'einai l'neder da'iraisa. The Chassam Sofer has a way of like packing it on. He says, if it's a minhag, you can't be matir it. Right? Remember, the Gemara says that minhagim are binding as a neder. If it's a neder, I can go to three people, three rabbis maybe, and we get out of the neder. Okay, right? Can I go over to three rabbis and say, you know what? I don't want to wait 6 hours anymore. Can I do that? Can I go to three rabbis and say, I don't want to keep the prohibition of kitnios? Wouldn't this be awesome? This would be like one of the greatest kulos in Judaism. Right? Says the Chassam Sofer, it doesn't work. Right? Ein lo hatara. And then he says it's a neder da'iraisa. And everyone jumps up and down and spits one of the nickels. Neder da'iraisa, Gemara says it's the Rabbanon. But the answer might be that when the Gemara says that minhag is binding midrabbanon, that means a personal minhag. You see, to have a neder, to have a vow min haTorah, the Gemara in Shavuos Chafav says you have to articulate it. I have to say, potato chips are forbidden on me. I have to say it. If I think it, Hank Bismargen, I think from today to tomorrow, it doesn't become forbidden. Right? Minhag. I do something. I don't articulate it. It's not asur min haTorah, it's asur midrabbanon. But the Chassam Sofer is probably getting at an idea that if you have a communal minhag, that everybody is doing it, or B'nai Ashkenaz, don't drink the milk, so maybe communal minhagim are binding min haTorah. Maybe that's what the Chassam Sofer means. And this, really, you understand why the Chassam Sofer was so opposed to reform. Once you have this shtickl Torah, that minhagim become dinim da'iraisa. So anyone who tries to change the minhag, you're not playing with little chips over here. You're hitting hard. You're hitting dinim da'iraisa. The Chassam Sofer l'shitaso felt that minhagim da'iraisa, if it's a communal minhag, and no sway, etc. Obviously, there's more to say, but the basic point I'm trying to make tonight is communal minhagim, we have to assume are stronger than private minhagim. One could argue that the Gemara in the Dharma says that a minhag is rabbinic, that is private minhagim. But a communal minhag, and again, how we define community, does community mean Bennett Avenue? Does community mean all of Teaneck? Right? I don't know. We gotta figure it out. But communal minhagim, at least for the Chassam Sofer, are stronger than it's d'oraisa. And there are two opinions in Shulchan Aruch, and we try to be machmir on this. There's no hatara on communal minhagim. No? A friend of mine was a Sephardi by birth, and he didn't like Sephardi practices because he became yeshivish, and being Sephardi is like not yeshivish. So he wanted to be matir all of his Sephardi minhagim. And he spoke to somebody who told him he's allowed to do it. That guy who gave him that heter, I think, like, was smoking something. Like, it don't work like that. You can't be matir your minhagim. Now, there is a way if I say, you know what? If minhagim are based on a community, so I could say, you know what? I lived in a Sephardi community until now. Now I live in the Ashkenazi community. I'm going to be bound by that. But to be matir neder presumably doesn't make sense. So matir neder is something that I accept on myself. So then I get out of it by appearing in front of the tribunal. But to be matir neder and communal minhagim, I'm not in charge of the practice of kitnius, no? Believe me, I'd much rather not have the practice of kitnius, no? I don't think that's such a chiddush.
4 days of slichos.
What?
That would have to be on exchange of 40 days of
slichos. Yeah, okay, but you know what? Like, I'll get rid of both of them. Whatever. Can I be matir? I don't think you could be matir neder if you're a Sephardi to not do Sephardi practices. What you can do is you could say, I don't live in a Sephardi community anymore, and now I'm an Ashkenazi.
Yeah.
That you can do.
Okay.
Or you can say that out of respect for the local Ashkenazi, you'll follow their matir practice.
Yeah, so then it's not really binding in the sense of that's just like I'm faking it, you know?
Because it's saying you move your food back to a Sephardi community.
That's
Yeah. I once heard it's incorrect to say that I'm a minig not to do something. A minig means that you're doing something. If you're not doing something, it's a chumra. Is that...
So I'm not sure that that's correct. Like, we're going to see as we go through that there are minhagim in the positive sense and minhagim in the negative sense. I don't know that's correct. Some try to defend the Chassam Sofer along the lines. And Rabbi Simon Sefer over here, one of his suggestions is to defend the Chassam Sofer. He says, Dereis along the lines that maybe a positive minhag is... again, the Chassam Sofer is talking about the minhag of not having the milk, right? So some say that if the minhag is to do a mitzvah or to keep a halacha, then it's really binding min ha-Torah. Most, if it's tamazay a minhag, then it's not binding min ha-Torah. That's the way they try to say it. The Chassam Sofer is talking about a negative minhag, no?
Right.
Minhag not to have milk.
The word minhag is a conduct, you know, when of doing something.
Right.
Not doing something.
I hear. So what I'd like to talk about next week is another very broad topic that relates, which is what's the scope of minhag beating halacha? It's like one of the most razzle-dazzled concepts ever, so we'll discuss that next week. And hi, Gila.
Oh, no, I'm sorry, because there's a question on what you said, but it's time.
Okay, so that's what we'll discuss, and thank you for coming, and have a good evening.
So we're meeting next week.
We're meeting next week.